Hello and welcome to the Fifth Quarter Footy Podcast. Today we are again going through some 2023 season previews. We've previously done the teams in alphabetical order from Adelaide to the Dockers, and today we'll be looking at Geelong and Gold Coast. The key indicators that we'll be looking at, ins and outs for both teams, a prediction, an aim for the club, and then a few individual players who are ready to take the next step, and then players who are under pressure. For this episode, these are two teams that Dieter has focused on, so you'll probably be hearing his voice a little more than mine. That being said, I will be also giving my input and my thoughts. Dieter, how are you going?
Yeah, going well. Two very interesting clubs. Obviously, Geelong coming off a premiership, and Gold Coast, I guess, and soul searching after another no finals appearance in their existence. So excited to look into them and talk about them, and hopefully we can have some good conversations. Looking at Geelong, firstly, they've had quite a few outs, whether they're retirees, delistings, or trades. And you look at Dalhouse and Higgins, both retired, both from obviously different clubs at the club. Geelong brought in to probably fill in a list need for some experience and class. Quinton Narkle, which surprised me when he got delisted. He had some incredible games when he was playing pure midfield, but he had a few sub-affected games in 2022. And probably the most interesting one of all was Cooper Stevens was traded. That interested me because Selwood was probably the big name that retired. And Cooper Stevens, I think, played for Geelong Falcons in the under-18 league. He was earmarked to be the next, Selwood replacement when that came. But him walking out the door to Hawthorn was a big surprise to me. Any insights into the outs?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting bunch. I mean, Dalhouse, Higgins, you know, they were on the outside, playing when they needed. Still great players in their own regard. Narkle caught me a little off guard in terms of being delisted. Selwood retiring, obviously, there's not much you can do about that. He won his premiership and he was ready to go. I don't blame him. What a fantastic career he had. Cooper Stevens leaving, a little surprising, but also not surprising, I think, in my opinion. He was in that awkward position of being a young Geelong player who was just not getting a chance. And I mean, I don't know how many games he did. He play a game at all?
I think
he played a handful.
He played
at
a
one
handful
stage.
This year.
And yeah.
Well, 2022 and maybe 2021. But it's interesting that he left. But we can understand why.
And he's going to get a lot more opportunity at Hawthorn. And look, as you said, he was looking likely to be the Selwood sort of replacement. That being said, they've gone to the... you'll talk about him in a sec, but they've gone to the draft and they've picked up a guy who instantly was labelled the next Selwood, and that is Jai Clark. But obviously, you'll touch on him in a minute. In terms of the outs, like there's some pretty big names in that list. That being said, I don't think any of those losses are going to have a huge impact other than maybe Selwood. Overall, I think they're not too upset about it.
No, I think the only... hurt that Selwood leaving is just that on-field leadership. When shit hits the fans, you do need that level-headed captain that Selwood has been for his career.
That being said, though, they're a team, I think, full of leaders. That I think just naturally comes with such an experienced list like they have.
Yeah, that's true. He's definitely surrounded by some great leaders up and down the field, from Hawkins to Dangerfield to even Blixarves.
Absolutely. So
it's interesting that it's backflipped in their ins, that they've got in a few players that might be the reason why Narkle was delisted, why Cooper Stevens was sought a trade. They brought in Jack Bowes from Gold Coast, Tanner Bruin from GWS, and Ollie Henry from Collingwood. You look at them and they are sort of different to what they already have, which is high draft picks, that are young but experienced. And I think that really improves them in terms of like a Cooper Stevens, who's only played, you know, less than 10 games. You look at Jack Bowes, Tanner Bruin, they've played 40 plus games. And so I think that really improves them. I don't know where Jack Bowes will be playing his footy, whether it's in the midfield or off half back. I think he's too good to be playing in the seconds, and they're not going to be paying him $800,000 a year to be in that position, barring form and injury. Tanner Bruin, you know, that's a midfield half forward. I think long term he'll be playing pure midfield once the old brigade of Geelong sort of phase out. And Ollie Henry, he's just a young forward that they probably need, and they don't have a type of forward that he is, that high flying contested mark for probably a medium sized player. And then in the draft, their highest pick for however many decades it seems, they pick up Jai Clark, who is a local boy, and you know, plays that same position that Joel Selwood played all those years ago when he was first picked up. So I think incredible get for Geelong. And you look at that go home factor that some teams or states have. Geelong have a nest egg in the west of Victoria that they can just bring home, even guys from other Victorian clubs, like anyone west of Werribee is going home to Geelong.
And it's amazing you say that as well, because that's probably, being Victorians ourselves, outside of, you know, the Melbourne CBD area or the Melbourne suburbs, I'd say that Geelong region, as you said, west of Werribee, I'd say that's where most of the best non-professional football is played. And you look at just all the players that have come from that area, there's just so many big names. And as you said, there's always that go-home factor that you see with Geelong. And I mean, I look at those ins and outs, and I know not all of them were go-homes, but I think they've improved on last season from what was a premiership winning team.
I know. I think it's scary to think that they've only improved their list. Just something to note. I think Tanner Bruin, Ollie Henry and Jai Clark are Geelong Falcon boys, which is just fascinating that they do target those, as well as get experienced players from the VFLs and SANFLs that are... will just play there regularly and never leave. So my prediction for them, despite the fact that they won a flag, I'm hoping Father Time comes for Geelong, because I can't see them winning anymore, or don't want to see them winning anymore. But I don't think it matters where Geelong finishes. Personally, I think they finish anywhere between 3rd and 8th. And I think the reason why that's my prediction is they're vulnerable in their forward line, that if Hawkins and Cameron, one of those injured, or even both of those, I think they might be currently under injury clouds, you do wonder if they have a replacement. They have a few sort of tall players that can play in the forward line, but I think that's their biggest vulnerability on the field outside of maybe their rucks. But they're just... you know, they just get regular old rucks that do the job, and that's the Geelong way. What are your thoughts on their prediction?
Yeah, 3rd to 8th, it's a pretty broad range. But again, Geelong are a team where they've always been pretty hard to pick. Generally, they will always sneak in the 8. Obviously, I said just before, they've improved. Probably looking at their ins and outs, they've improved. And I think the only reason I see them dropping to what I think will probably be maybe a 5th or a 6th is, one, they do have an aging list, and that's been said for a while, but it's, I think with Selwood retiring, it's sort of sinking in that little bit more, that their list is getting little bit older.
Tom Hawkins, 35.
That's what I mean. And it's something that will always be discussed with Geelong. It has been for so long now, but I think with the first of those sort of that core retiring, we might start seeing that little bit of regression. But the big reason why I have them dropping to maybe 5th or 6th is because I think the teams around them are only improving even more.
Mm.
So it's not really a knock on Geelong as such. I just think it's just the way it'll be. And it's hard to win a flag and then go on and be, you know, a top two team in the league come the end of round 23. So I'm saying fifth or sixth in that sort of area of the ladder.
I think it's interesting. If you look at all the clubs in the top eight, including Geelong, they've all improved their list.
Mm.
And you're like, how are they all going to fit in the top four? How are they going to fit in the top six? You just don't know.
And that's why, and that's good, the point you say. I've mentioned in every episode so far, we've got a top 10 going into this season. And I think that's why the top 10 is so clear. Every one of those 10 teams have improved going into 2023. And a lot of the reason as to why they've improved is because they have gotten players off that bottom eight.
Which is sad to see.
It's sad, but it's just the reality of the situation. I don't think we've ever seen such a... I mean, it's pre-season, so this take that I've sort of got in my head could be completely wrong. And in a way, I hope it is, because I like the idea of having a few surprises thrown out. But I don't think I can remember a season where going into it, there's 10 teams that I just have so far ahead of the rest. It's so unique, and it's going to be an interesting watch to see if that actually is what unfolds.
Yeah, well, certainly, if that's the case, you know, 10 doesn't fit into 8, so I think every game is going to be a crunch match, especially when you're playing, or two teams are playing against one another, and they're in that top 10 bracket. Sort of moving on, I think for Geelong, you know, they can finish anywhere in the top 8. As long as they make finals, I wouldn't want to be playing them, to be honest, because we saw their management of Dangerfield and Selwood and other sort of older players last year, where they'd have a few weeks off and just rest them, get their body right, and then they were all peaking in the finals. And I think that experience from their medical department and their list sort of management sort of side, I think...
Player management.
Yeah, player management, exactly. I think that's an incredible opportunity that last year presented them, and they now know how to continue on this aging list. But something to note as well, when you play in the grand final and you're Sydney and Geelong, you're the last two teams to be playing in it, which means their off season is shorter, and particularly for older bodies, you know, one thing they don't need to do as much training, but two, that recovery does take its toll. And I think the AFL Players Association mandates that players aren't expected to do any training for 3 weeks. I think that's agreed upon in, you know, the AFL sort of rule book. So, you know, you look at teams that didn't make the eight, they've had 5 weeks off on top of Geelong and Sydney. You look at the people that were knocked off in the first week, like Bulldogs and Richmond, they have an extra 3 weeks to recover, and that 3 weeks between losing their, you know, first week of finals to Geelong, winning the grand final, they've had those 3 weeks off. So they're hitting their preseason earlier. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see if that takes a toll on them.
And that's a great point you make, because there's every year there seems to be a team that's slow out of the gate, whether it's a result of having a bit of a lesser preseason or the teams around them having more of a preseason. But when you get off to a slower start and you don't win those early games, it does add a lot of pressure on teams. You know, we look, and it also gives teams a chance to maybe overachieve on a season. You look at Carlton last year, they probably did overachieve in the first half of the year, going 8-3 or whatever it was. But then they didn't make it. That was probably a big reason for that, was they had a big preseason. They got the wins under their belt early. Did it work out for them in the long term? No. But then you look at Port Adelaide. They were a team who were, people were looking at to be a bit of a contender potentially. They lost five in a row. So
yeah, they lost seven or something like that.
It might have been six or seven. Yeah. I don't know if it was seven, but five or six in a row. And then come the back end of the season, they were probably playing well enough to play finals, but that slow start put them in a position where playing finals just wasn't an option for them. And now they're going to be fighting for that top eight spot this year with a bit of an easier draw, with more preseason. So they're a team that could come out flying out of the box. Well, so it's interesting with Geelong, as you said, less pre-season, aging bodies. Will that have an impact early on?
Yeah, I think that's a great point as well, bringing up Carlton and Port Adelaide, who are the bottom two teams in that top 10, who we expect to do a lot this season. And as I mentioned before, they've had 5 extra weeks off compared to Geelong. Whether that's complete rest or building their training loads, they've got 5 weeks on top of Geelong. And you can imagine that the lists that Port Adelaide and Carlton have, they are younger and, you know, they've had that time off. They're going to really attack this first part of the AFL season with a lot more energy potentially. You know, still a lot of water to go under that bridge given we're still pre-season, but I think that resting factor, that's over a month of no football or anything like that.
It's a long time.
And a long time to also refresh the mental side as well of football. Absolutely. And just to get away, go back to their home states. You know, I think, you know, Carlton and Port Adelaide are probably ones to watch. But moving back onto Geelong, I think their aim, if they can make top 4, they get home finals, whether they win in the first week or lose in the first week. I think as long as they don't have to travel outside of the first 2 weeks, I think they'll be very dangerous. And I think of all the teams in the top 10, I think Geelong is probably the team I do not want to play until the last week of the finals, to be honest. I think they're just so dangerous at that point in the end with Chris Scott, having been there so many times before, and the list that he has with all those aged veterans who've been in finals. You look at if Geelong have to play a Carlton, well, Geelong has probably more wins or finals experience in Tom Hawkins than maybe the entire Carlton list.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's a great point you make. They're the last team you want to play in finals. Them and Melbourne, I think, are the two that you just probably don't want to face in finals. Geelong, they've got that killer instinct that it's sort of hard to teach. It's something that sort of, it seems to be like an innate trait amongst winning teams.
I don't want to say it's arrogance, but they just know how to win.
And
it's that confidence.
And at this level of football, you do need to have that. I think that's what holds a lot of teams back. I think it's what's held like a Brisbane back the last few years. I think they don't have that. It's something that I think they need to develop. But yeah, Geelong have absolutely... they've got sort of the finals by the scruff of the neck, and they just seem to ragdoll teams when they get there. They seem to peak at that time of year all the time, and everyone has learned to never rule the Cats out.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what stage of the season or what stage of finals, you cannot rule Geelong out. So, yeah, really interesting team to watch.
Sort of moving on, the player to take the next step, you know, it's interesting given the list demographics of Geelong's aging team. I sort of pointed the finger at Brandon Parfitt to make the next step. So he's 24 years old. He was the medical sub in the grand final. I think he came on the last quarter. I think he's going to be really pivotal for them, or Geelong, continuing on their finals run, whether it's this year or into the future. I think he's been around the club for so long that he's seen how a Selwood prepares. He's seen how a Dangerfield prepares. And I think he's going to be really hungry with the potential opportunity. Because you look at Guthrie or Meningola or Mitch Duncan, they're 29 years old or older. I think Parfitt is that next step, or that link really between the Jai Clark and your Guthrie.
Yeah, I like the way you put that. He's that link, absolutely. He's someone who does, though, need to keep his spot in the team. You know, he's come in and out for a fair few years now. The two names that came to my mind with Geelong taking the next step. First one was Max Holmes. He's a young guy who I think could have a good year. He'll probably push up the ground a little more, I think. Sort of looking to play on the wing, maybe inside a little more. But just sheer speed and excitement in terms of his game. The other one is Zach Guthrie. I think he really took a big step last year. Yeah, they're the two that sort of sprung to my mind. But I do like the Parfitt thing. The fact that he is that link, as you said, it does make him a really pivotal player for Geelong moving forward.
Yeah. Oh, geez. Max Holmes was a bit stiff getting that. I think it was a hamstring injury the week before the grand final. You just feel sorry for a bloke like that. And you do see players in finals whose team eventually wins it miss out. And you feel bad for him.
Flashbacks to Bob Murphy, is it, in your mind?
Well, I was at the game when Bob Murphy did it. And I think that was in round 5 or something. but I think that was the motor feed infected. But I think for Bulldogs in that year, it was Lin Jong got injured in West Coast week 1. But it hurts. And especially the week before your grand final, I think Jack Graham had a shoulder injury before Richmond won their flag in 2020, I think it was. You know, there's stories all over football throughout the years of players like that. But looking at players under most pressure, these are two very different type of players and for different reasons. Player number one, Jack Bowes, only reason why he's under pressure, and I think it's just the price tag that he comes with it. And whether or not he's an $800,000 player, that's up for debate. But if you're getting paid that in 365 days of your contract, you should be making sure that you are fit and firing for the season ahead and coming into a new team. We're hoping he's had a great off season. From all reports, he's really done well and integrated seamlessly into Geelong's playing style and culture. So he's sort of a different player under pressure because there's that financial element about it. Did you want to say anything?
Yeah, I think it's fair enough. It's not on Bowes necessarily. It's more just the contract around it. With that much money comes pressure. I think you've hit the nail on the head. That's all there is to say, really.
Yeah, and the next player I had was Isava Radigalia, and we just don't know what to expect from him. You know, he had his opportunities at full forward. He had his opportunities in the ruck. I heard playing in the VFL last year, he was playing key defence, and Port were looking at him and wanted to bring him across to Port Adelaide. So, I don't know. I think this is going to be a really make or break year for him at Geelong, whether he moves on the end of the season. He really needs to show something because he's got that athletic profile that he should, you know, take games by the scruff of the neck.
Yes, absolutely. He's going to be 25 years old this year, Big Radigalia. He's the kind of guy who we mentioned earlier, if, you know, Cameron and Hawkins go down, who comes in? He's the kind of guy who, in an ideal world for Geelong, he comes, slots in, kicks 2 goals. He's that guy, and he hasn't been able to do that on a consistent basis at all. I like him. I'd love to see him do well, but it's just hard to see sort of something changing at this point. You know, he's going into his 7th year of AFL football now, and I know he is a bigger body, key position player. It does take time, but it is getting to a stage where questions have to start being asked, and I think it is probably a make or break year.
He's a good option to have as backup for your Cameron or your Hawkins, but he should have that ability to play that third tall option to then pinch hit in the ruck,
especially given how Geelong's ruck has been looking the last few years too. So I agree with this call. I do like Radigalia, but yeah, he's definitely under pressure for mine.
Yeah, I think it'd be definitely an interesting year for him. He's got all the potential to really almost improve Geelong, you know, whether it's his first choice ruckman, because their rucks at the moment are quite old. They're 30 plus, and at his age, he could be the number one ruck from this year onwards. But his just consistency is just up and down, which is just tough for young players to try and get a handle on that. But I think that's all for Geelong. What are you, any last minute thoughts?
Yeah, all you can say is never count them out. And here comes the Gold Coast Suns. Yeah. I know we've both got a pretty similar opinion on certain things with the Suns, so I think there, yeah, let's get straight into the Suns.
Yeah, Gold Coast were sort of interesting in their ins and outs, a bit different compared to Geelong, where Geelong had better ins coming in than outs sort of leaving the club. And Geelong let go of Jack Bowes, Josh Corbett, Jez McLennan, Isaac Rankin, and that's sort of a bit of a motley crew to be naming. But each of those players have a question mark on the list management side.
Big
and
time.
I'll go through them individually and maybe you can sort of have your say after that. But Jack Bowes was an academy player. Why is he leaving the club? Obviously, he's got a big pay packet attached to him, but you know, if a player is tied to your club, as Jack Bowes was, and you had first access to him, and he's a top 10 pick or whatever he was, why would you even be letting him go? He should not. He doesn't have a go home factor like Isaac Rankin did, and you know, Isaac Rankin, a top 3 pick, you just don't want to see top 3 picks moving after, you know, I think 4 seasons at the club. That's tough to see Isaac Rankin go. Josh Corbett, a bit different. And the reason why I've mentioned him was in the draft concessions that Gold Coast got in 2019, I think it was, Gold Coast and Carlton could pre-list mature age players. So they could pick any player inside of Australia. And if they were 19 years or older, they could sign them without having to go through the draft. And they picked up Josh Corbett, who won the Best Young Player Award in the VFL that season. He's a third tall marking forward. Good set shot for goal. Just didn't come on. And you just wonder why, you know, why couldn't Gold Coast pick someone who was going to stay there and had just potential to be around for the 10 years. So it's just unfortunate that he didn't work out. And then Jez McLennan delisted, 0 games after, I think, 4 years as well. They used 2 second round picks on him and he was pick 24 or something. Why? I don't know. I just don't understand Gold Coast list management or selectors to use 2 second round picks on a player outside of top 20. You should not be doing that at all. So I think that just hurts Gold Coast in the long term, that they couldn't get 2 players with their 2 second round picks that could be potentially there for the next 10 years.
Yeah, I mean, you and I have had plenty of discussions in our own time about how poor we think this list management of Gold Coast has been for a long time. Jack Bowes, he was pick 7 in the draft.
They traded.
Oh, sorry. They traded pick 7 to get rid of him.
To Geelong, who won the flag.
And then that's who they picked up, Jai Clark. So they basically traded to Geelong Jack Bowes and Jai Clark. In essence, with that move.
And just to get rid of $800,000.
And I'm sorry, but if they need that money, they've got to be looking elsewhere. I'm not saying Jack Bowes is a superstar and who warrants that money. I don't think he is worth that money. However, as you touched on, Dina, he's a guy who, he was an academy player. He definitely showed that he was capable of being a very solid player in the AFL. It just blows my mind that they went to such lengths to get rid of him. There is 0 clubs in the AFL who would have ever said no to what they offered Geelong in that trade.
Bulldogs would have done it.
Every club would have done it. It doesn't matter that he's paying $800K. Getting pick 7 for free.
You got to
take a guy who would be best 22 at, in I think every team.
Yeah.
You're taking that guy with, yes, he has a bigger pay packet than most. You take him on board and you get pick 7. I just think they've gotten away with murder, Geelong. Gold Coast. I'm only going to talk about that trade because I won't go into the others. But I just think that just sums up Gold Coast over the past few years. Their list management has just been so appalling. That should just never happen in a professional organisation.
I will say this as well, and it just came to me. If Isaac Rankin is leaving, why can't you pay part of his money to Jack Bowes? I just don't understand it.
I just can't get my head around what's happened with the list management. And, move on.
Move on.
I'm getting frustrated.
Oh, I know. So, ins this for Gold Coast, Jed Anderson, Tom Berry, Connor Blakely, Ben Long, and they had a good first-round pick in Bailey Humphrey at pick 6. You look at those names that were ins, and they're all a bit nothing.
I've got a good analogy. I feel like they're Band-Aids on a stab wound. They're not going to do much. They'll cover it up for 5 minutes, but then... yeah, they're going to get exposed soon enough.
Jed Anderson and Connor Blakely are behind Took Miller, Noah Anderson.
Raoul.
Obviously, they're going to be, backup if they ever get injured, but they're not improving the list where it needs to be improved. Obviously, Tom Berry, small forward, comes in, we guess, to help... play a bit of a Isaac Rankin role, but if you had your options, who are you picking? And then, Ben Long, I think that's a good pick. I think that's probably the best pick of the four. I think he really improves them down back because they've had a few injuries with Connor Butterick and Lockie Weller with their ACLs. And I really like Ben Long. I was sad Bulldogs didn't pick him up a few years ago in the draft, but St Kilda beat us to him. I think he's got great skills and he's got a bit of that mongrel about him, which all teams need. And I like the fight that Ben Long will bring.
Yeah, I think out of the four players they've traded in or brought in, I should say, Ben Long, for me, is the best of those players with AFL experience. I think good word for him is he's got that little bit of mongrel, bit of X factor. I think he had some really great games for St Kilda. And I think I look at the list of Gold Coast and he's a player who will slot straight in. He'll play a good role for him. I can't see how that's not a good pickup. The rest of them, like Jed Anderson, he'll be good for a year or two just to fill in a role. Blakely, same. Berry is a bit of a question mark. And then, Bailey Humphrey as a draft pick. I mean, I guess it's wait and see. I think it'll be fine. Pick 6. I think it was a good selection at that point of the draft.
I think
it's the outs that are getting me with Gold Coast.
I think the outs and the reason for their outs.
Yes.
And you can tie this all back to their list management for one reason or another. And those four players that we mentioned that left the club just had sort of different reasons that could have been remedied one way or another. In terms of predictions for 2023, I think they're a sneaky chance to make the top 8. And I'm going to say 8th is the highest that they could ever reach. And I think having Ben King back is just going to improve them so much because a player of his caliber, missing for all of 2022, that goal focus that he brings to them will obviously be back now that he's sort of recovering from his ACL. And I think, if you're bringing in Ben King, I think that just improves your lists. I mean, you can almost imagine that he wasn't playing last year or on the list because he couldn't get a game because of his injury. And I think the bottom that they finish, looking at the clubs around them, I think 14th. I think there's some clubs that have clearly worse lists than them. And for one reason or another, they're in that rebuild stage. And I think GWS or Gold Coast are not in that rebuild stage. They're really fighting for any spot in the top 8 or even just outside of it. Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of prediction, I've got them sort of anywhere from 11 to 13, 14. It's easy to look at that prediction and say, well, you've been slamming them a bit in this sort of preview. And that is true. The reason why I think, though, it can come across that way is they should be at this stage fighting, like they should be a top eight quality team, and they just are not. There is the off chance that they sneak in. A lot of people think they will sneak in. I just personally don't see it. I look at the lists of all the teams I have above them, and I take those lists every day of the week.
I think they're the only club that I can foresee outside of the top 10 doing anything.
Yes, I do think that they are the best. I think them and Essendon are the only ones that I could see doing much. I probably do have Gold Coast that... they're about on par with Essendon in my eyes. But yeah, I think the club should be aiming for top 8. I just don't think it's going to happen personally.
Yeah, fair enough. Obviously, being a club that is yet to make any finals appearances, I think their aim somehow make finals. Obviously, finishing, you know, lower on the ladder, they have a better draw. They've got some players back from injury. They'll get Lockie Weller and Connor Butterick and Ben King. That'll hopefully improve their lists. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, it's easy to look at the negatives, but if you just look at what's happening on the field, take away the off-field stuff. On the field, there are things happening that will hopefully send them in the right direction. And that is with players returning, key players returning. Ben King being the obvious standout. I think he's going to be one of the premier forwards of the league. Whether it's this year or not, we'll see. But yeah, I think on the field, there are things happening that should be big positives.
Yeah.
And if they're not, well then, again, alarm bells will start to ring.
I felt like last year was their best season as a club outside of maybe 2 or 3 years with Gary Ablett.
Wow. It's not a bad call, you know.
And I think that's because Tuk Miller has really just shown how good of a player he is, winning back-to-back All-Australians.
And a leader as well.
I guess. A pure leader as well that almost Cripps-like, where he will be the one to run through the wall first and, you know, the rest of his team will follow him. Mm-hmm. And you do need that type of player, whether he's the official captain or just a leader of the footy club. I think Tuk Miller is certainly one of my favourite players. Very underrated and a bit of a draft steal because he wasn't anywhere near the top 10 or top 20.
Absolutely.
And I think they've finally got their midfield right. Yes. And I think having those bigger bodies, experience, but high-end talent that Urells and Andersons have to help with your Tuk Miller, I think, you know, I think you can see that they have the potential to make the top 8 on paper, given the amount of draft concessions and first-round picks. But obviously, it takes a lot more than that to make the finals. You know, players... A player in my eyes to take the next step is Sam Flanders. By all reports, this preseason he's had a huge one. He's played 30 games in 3 years and he's playing that half forward midfield position. I think he's got great goal sense. I think he's got exceptional footy smarts and he's got a bit of X factor about him. And I think those three footy, maybe intangibles, if you will, have you a like poorer version of an Isaac Rankin. Whereas, you know, Isaac Rankin had all that as well as that unpredictableness. I think Sam Flanders has a big year. I think he's going to have that opportunity with a few players like Isaac Rankin and Jack Bowes leaving. Although those two players are in different positions to him, I think Sam Flanders... I think, yeah, he'll be in for a big year at the half-forward position. Thoughts?
Yeah. I the player that first came to mind for me was also Sam Flanders. So it's interesting. He's a guy who, if you don't watch a lot of Gold Coast, you probably won't know much about him, just purely because he was a little bit in and out up until last year. Even a bit of the start of last year, I want to say he came in and out. I could be wrong in saying that, though. As you said, it seems like his preseason has been really good. Opportunity is there. He was a high draft pick. I think pick 11, yeah, I want to say.
Somewhere around there, yeah.
So, he's been in the system for long enough now.
Now he's fourth preseason.
So, yeah, he's been in the system for long enough where you'll start to see that improvement, hopefully. The other player that came to mind was Matt Rowell. Bit of a different one, but I think he obviously started off so well, got injured, and I think he did get a little bit of, not criticism as such, but I think the footy world sort of forgot about him a little bit last season.
And the year before,
yes. I think he just sort of got left in the shadows. Noah Anderson really stood up, and I think he took a little bit of the spotlight away from Rowell. And I think now that Rowell has had consistent footy for a while, playing next to a guy like Tuk Miller, I just think he's going to have a good year coming out. I think he's just such a class act. And I think, again, what's this now? Is this his fourth year as well? Yeah, I think he's going to be really exciting this season and in the future. And I don't think that would be a surprise to many people either. I think he's just a class act.
Well, it's very interesting you say Rao, because you look at their 2019 draft year and they had Rao and Anderson, Sam Flanders and Jeremy Sharp in that draft pool. And you look at that, and this year is really the perfect time for all four of those players to really showcase why they were so highly touted. Even though Jeremy Sharp was
Pick 20 odd,
he made All-Australian in his underage and overage in his under 18 year in the National Carnival.
And am I right in saying they traded up to get him?
They traded with Geelong, and that was a disaster of a trade They got Jeremy Sharp. They kept him because he wanted to go to Freo last off-season.
That's right, yes.
I think having those four players, they're all very different, but they all play a midfield role or half forward if you're Sam Flanders. But I think that's the right age demographic in their fourth season to really propel Gold Coast up. And I think you can imagine those four players will be behind the reason why, you know, Gold Coast might make the top eight.
Yep, I think that's a great point you make. Yep, I think you've hit the nail on the head there.
So hopefully going to finish this before 15 minutes is up. But looking at players under pressure, you can probably hear it by our tone of voice in our discussion with Gold Coast list management and recruiting. They, for me, are under the pump for so many reasons.
They shouldn't be in a job to start off.
They really, every year they do something a head scratcher. So they really need to get their act together. They need a reset now that Jack Bowe's money's off the books. Stop overpaying players that aren't playing regular footy in the best 22, and hopefully retain some interstate players this off, you know, the end of this.
Going forward
and into the future. They've just done so many mistakes, and I have to try find an article on all the mistakes, but they've done mistakes with your Jez McLennans. They've done mistakes even with Jeremy Sharp. So them, for me, have been a source of much amusement and head-scratching over the years. In terms of players, in no particular order, Rory Aitkins, for me, he was delisted or not given a contract at Adelaide, and Gold Coast gave him a four-year deal worth north of $400,000, and he's not playing regular season or regular footy. Why paying that much money for him? I don't know. Fiorini, bit hard done by, because I think he's a good player and I rate him. It's just unfortunate that he's behind, you know, David Swallow, Tuk Miller and Anderson and Rowell. But I think he's under the pump because he's also getting a lot of money, so he didn't want to leave when his contract was up a few years ago. Lukosius, a top two pick, He's got great ability, but he really needs to start to find a home somewhere in this position on the ground. I think Lockie Weller, again, traded from Frio for a pick two, which turned out to be Andy Brayshaw. That hurts. And Darcy McPherson also on a lot of money as well. So there's a lot of players mismanaged with the coin that they're getting for not being in the team particularly, or being high draft picks and not delivering.
Yeah, I won't touch on all of those guys, but I'll just mention a couple. Rory Atkins, he's an interesting case. He's a guy who really had an opportunity when he got to the Suns to come in and be a true leader for what was such a young team. Now, Gold Coast aren't the young team they once were. When he got there, though, he could have really made a pretty big name for himself if he got it right. And he just had no luck with injuries, and then just wasn't able to put his form, show his form on the ground as well. So it's a shame to see him really go backwards, I'd say, which is a shame. So I would say he's definitely under pressure. The other one I would mention, and it's somewhat similar, oh, not quite, that's a bit stiff to say, but Weller, Lockie Weller, they traded a lot to get him into the club. I think the pick that ended up being Andrew Brayshaw was what they gave up. So again, another questionable trade. I like the idea of them going after a guy who actually really wanted to go to Gold Coast. I think that was a unique opportunity for them. It was something that was foreign, and I think it sends a great message to players who might want to go to the Gold Coast if they are willing to bring him in, but they paid a lot to get him in, and he's a good player. He plays well, and I'm a big fan of him, but he just isn't doing enough.
Yeah.
And it's as simple as that. He's stuck on the half back line, on the wing, kind of in the midfield.
I will say he's sort of coming back from an ACL injury. Yes. So we're not expecting him to shoot the lights out in this season, but you know, when you give up pick two, you're giving up pick two
to a guy who was almost a Brownlow medalist last year.
That hurts. Like that's another questionable decision from the Gold Coast recruiting staff. But you know, this is all in hindsight, unfortunately. Any last comments? I'm all out.
Yeah, look, I think I hope the year goes well for Gold Coast.
Yeah,
I think everyone would be pretty happy to see them do well. I would, even though they frustrate me a lot. They're just so stuck in the middle of the road. It's concerning, but the potential is there, and I want to see them sort of break through the barriers that they've sort of created for themselves in a way.
Yeah, I think there's so many players that are really exciting to watch, and I think this year we're going to see all of them on the field coming back from injury or having traded them into the club. We're hoping, you know, Bailey Humphrey, their first pick in 2022 draft, does well. Ben King, you know, when he's up and firing, he won't drop any marks. Malcolm Roses Jr., incredible skills in front of goal and all that. So they've got players that are really fun to watch and exciting. So I think Stewie Jew's on the right path, but we do think that he's probably also under the pressure as well. But I think, you know, this might be a big year. This might be their biggest year without Gaz, or even with Gaz. So we'll wrap it up there. You can get in touch with us on our Twitter account. Leave some comments if you found something interesting or that we didn't cover. Any last words?
Yeah, we'll leave all the details in the description of this episode. There'll be a few questions if you want to answer them, if you're on Spotify, that is. There'll be some questions on the Twitter page, which you'll find in the link. Other than that, next episode we'll be discussing the Hawks and GWS. So make sure if you're interested in that, you tune in. Otherwise, we hope you enjoyed this episode. We look forward to hearing what you have to say. And yeah.
Talk to you later.
See you next time.